Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Also welcoming back to the show, radio host and cookbook author Capri Cafaro is here.
Yay! Welcome back.
Thank you.
Always happy to be back.
And we love that you're here. You're our favorite American.
Me.
I'm going to start with talking about the world learning now more about Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance. So he is seeing a lot of
interesting
reaction. So the man behind the controversial Hillbilly Elegy, that book, he is the first millennial on a major party ticket and someone once known for his hatred of Trump. Who's now done the biggest flip-flop in history, it seems like. Here's the thing, Capri. You actually worked in Ohio politics, where he's from. We're going to start with you because you know J.D. Vance.
Have you met him? You've met him?
I have met... Hold on,
guys.
So what do you think of this? What do you think of this choice?
So let me just, like, back up here. Yes. So I, in a previous life, most of my life, as a matter of fact, I spent in public service. I was a senator in the state legislature in Ohio for 10 years. And amazingly enough, J.D. Vance was apparently a junior staffer when I was a freshman in the Senate for somebody. So I actually did not know him at that point. After my time in office, I was doing cable news in the United States and ended up meeting him in the green room where he told me this because I had no idea that this was the case. I'm like, really? So this is one of the umpteen reasons I no longer do political commentary in my life, not only because it's divisive, but because it's a lot of it is very, very, very close to home. So I just told you, J.D. Vance was a junior staffer when I was a freshman senator in Ohio. You know, then, you know, he in 2022 ran for the United States Senate against one of my very best friends in politics, my former congressman. So I have some bias there. don't shoot the messenger, but my mother is a delegate for Trump in Milwaukee right now.
Wow. So this is very interesting.
So it is it makes my life very complicated. but in this perspective, let me say this. I don't think that this choice was not about what was best for America. It was about what was best for Donald Trump in his mind. Go ahead, because I know the next question is, but he said all this hateful stuff. We litigated this in Ohio 2 years ago in the primary. This all came out.
You're talking about when he was talking against Trump.
Exactly.
J.D. Vance used to believe in climate change.
Exactly.
He was like, dare I say, like a center?
I can't speak to that.
Okay. But he also called Trump, like he compared him to Hitler.
Yeah.
He has said that he was morally, what was the word he used? A moral disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So he said all this stuff and then has since done an about face. And my understanding is that he's partially said that some of that was like, he was influenced by mainstream media and then now has gotten to know Trump and totally believes. But what I find
is, did he have his eye on the prize?
Exactly.
Well, that's
the reason.
So I think that like every other Republican right now in the United States, whether you're Ted Cruz was upset about the fact that, you know, Donald Trump went after his wife, Heidi, you know, back in 2016, or, you know, Lindsey Graham, who said a lot of bad things about Trump and is now one of his best friends. Marco Rubio, same thing. Last night at the Republican convention, you saw Nikki Haley pony up, Rhonda Sanctimonious, which is pony up.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's a love fest.
It's kiss the ring.
Because Republicans cannot win without the Donald Trump coalition. So it is an issue of expedience. But this is, I think, an example of how Donald Trump is inexplicably, that's a different thing, but he has changed politics in America in so many ways, and this is just one more way, because here's someone who is 39 years old, who has only been in office for less than 2 years. He does not have political experience at all. So you look back to Sarah Palin. Here's somebody that, you know, was the mayor of Wasilla, Alaska, and the governor of Alaska. And everyone's like, oh, my goodness, like, she, you know, she doesn't have enough experience. Say, you know, that's what, even Barack Obama, same thing. He didn't have enough experience.
That's right.
Now, it's not about experience. It's not about age. And it's not about bringing a demographic to the table, whether it's a female, a person of color, or a state to give you electoral votes. It's about the ideology that you adhere to. And I think that's what you're saying.
Wow, great line.
Yeah.
Because
he's a staunch.
I mean,
from what I understand, he's a staunch anti-abortionist. Like he is flagging certain mm-hmm. elements mm-hmm. of the Trump America that Trump wants, even maybe more so than Trump himself does.
It's about the future. It's the future of MAGA. That's yeah. what this is.
This is what I was going to say. If you're Donald Trump Jr., you're kind of twisting a little bit right now because you are not the heir apparent. J.D. Vance is the guy.
Or maybe you're the next vice president of the United States
exactly,
on a Vance Trump ticket.
In 2028.
Yeah. Which is interesting because of his age, 39, it means that Trumpism has a life. Mm-hmm. It has a future. It doesn't end with Donald Trump. Hey, you know what? Also making international news, listen to this, is the record-breaking rainfall that hit Toronto.
I'd rather talk about that.
Flooding the city, including Drake's humble abode, which is called the Embassy. Yes. So here's Drake's, we're going to see Drake's abode. There we go. He shared footage of the brown water swamping his mansion. So I don't know what was everyone's experience yesterday here?
Ooh, I mean, it was a lot, right? Like it was intense. For me, I delayed going home. We lost power here in the building. Yeah. We have generators.
We ran on a generator. Y'all didn't know, but we did. Touch and go.
Technology. Yeah. But what I felt when I finally went to the train station was chaos. It did remind me a little bit of the blackout that happened.
Remember, 2003.
But at that time, it felt a little bit more like, oh, this is kind of fun. Look at this. This is a one-off, like a weird, what's happening?
That was also 20 years ago and it was a lot more
fun. We also weren't as reliant on our phones.
Exactly.
Was this like this felt more sinister to me. It felt like a reflection, like an indication of what's to come.
I think what's to come, listen, it's climate change. They call this the 1 in 100 year storm, which is now turning into the 1 in 50 year storm, which is turning into the 1 in 10 year storm.
Yeah.
So I walked home yesterday, it took me 3.5 hours. Sure did.
Oh my God.
How many steps did you get?
I got 30,000 steps in. I did, at one point, I was trying to get on a shuttle bus because all the subway stations along my line had shut down. So I got out and I was I felt like 1,000 people crowding the sidewalk. And I got to tell you, this is those doomsday feelings where you're just like, is this what's coming for us? And I was trying to protect these elderly ladies who had canes and people. I mean, we get, it's the worst of us in those times when it just feels like it's all for yourself. So I was lucky to be able to walk because people were getting surge priced on ride sharing for $300 and $400. And so I was
terrible.
It was terrible yesterday.
I had to go to Union, obviously, to try to get to Hamilton. And looking at the board, first of all, it was like the Hunger Games. Just everyone watching. Yeah. And then running to the gate. But then trains just like canceled. My train just disappeared. I was like, okay.
Maybe it just flooded.
And it
drowned.
But I felt like it also brought people together. And certainly where I was, there were people talking to each other, which is something I've never seen in Union Station.
You know what would bring people together? Even more during a flood, if the LCBO wasn't on strike.
Excellent.
Do we think it's all right to push our parents to be more self-sufficient? So a frustrated reader wrote to Dear Prudence saying their father regularly asks for help with simple things he's more than capable of doing, like setting up his new phone. So, I mean, this is what the author suggests that he's capable, but Capri, how have you dealt with this with your family?
Okay, so I have no boundaries. Maybe it's because I'm Italian. I don't know. But, I've kind of been dealing with this. My parents are in their early 70s, and my dad had a pretty significant health crisis about 2.5 years ago where he had open heart surgery and had a clot removed from his heart, all this other stuff. He is doing fine now. So that was a medical crisis. We all stepped up to the plate. And he ended up staying in my house as he was recovering because he couldn't do steps. My parents were there. Now, again, my parents have their full faculties. Entire full faculties. However, they seem to lean on me no matter what. Ah. So, and particularly even like,
Are you the oldest girl?
I am the oldest girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm the one that's the closest.
Yep.
So I live the closest to my parents. So it's always something. And they oftentimes they watch my dog, who's also been on the social. Mm-hmm. He's big in Canada. And they'll literally like call, they will like, take a picture of the remote and be like, I don't understand. And I'll be, filming someplace in South Dakota for my TV series, and they'll be like, I'm like, I'm currently like, you know,
on set
and you know, but nope, I gotta tend to this. So I have no boundaries. I feel like I need them, particularly since I helped take care of my grandparents in my 20s. Now I can see that I'm taking care of my parents in my 40s.
Are you okay with all this?
It's so I realize that I need to place some boundaries and try to find, and I'm talking with my sister, and I think that's the one thing. The one takeaway is to have those conversations now because my parents are okay right now, and they're stable, but 5 years from now, certainly 10 years from now, not so much. So come up with that plan now or else you will end up becoming a full-time caregiver.
You know, here's the thing. Yeah, you will. And you're a great daughter.
I love and respect and I get it. And it's hard to say no. It's so hard.
It's so hard to say no. And it depends. Like if your parents have all their faculties, sometimes parents are just tired. They're just tired. Yeah. They don't want to learn anything new, even if they can. You know, my parents, they immigrated, that immigrant story, and I think you got to have chutzpah and know-how and courage and bravery to leave your home country, cross the Atlantic, maybe in a boat and land here, and you're telling me you don't know how to work a VCR? Yeah. I don't understand. Which is why partially having grandchildren is part of the gift of grandchildren.
Right, they can
help. When my daughter was 4 years old, she taught my then 76-year-old dad how to use his very first cell phone. And so, and it was so adorable because she was four and she's like, avó, he's Portuguese, avó, this is how you FaceTime. So, you know, and so the gift of grandchildren. But my dad is fully capable of having learned that. He just chose not to learn it.
Oh, that's good. I wish my parents would actually use me more. Because isn't it, like, an example is my mother. Like, she will never call asking for help. She's been in the hospital. And she's let me know, like, weeks later.
Does she do that because she doesn't want to worry you?
Yes. And she'll be like, I knew you were at work. I didn't want to worry you. It's like, these are moments where you should let me know. The only time she has called, Simon and I were leaving her house and I saw her call and I'm like, oh God, what happened? Did she fall? Is everything okay? She's like, Jesse, I need you to come back. I'm like, what happened? The internet's down.
Yeah. The true crisis.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Call me when you need me, though.
I'll be, no help at all. Like, I already can barely help myself. I'm asking my son. This happened recently. I went to go visit my parents, and my mom couldn't connect her Fitbit to her iPad. So I was sitting there. I was following all the steps. I feel like I'm pretty smart.
Yeah.
And I should be maybe more technological, but I was doing all the things, and honestly, my 17-year-old niece's boyfriend walked in 2 seconds, he just goes, whatever, it's fixed. Yeah. And I just feel like,
he needs no help.
No matter what, I'm no help now, but it's all coming for all of us. Even you young people who are watching right now, it's coming for you too, okay?
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm not horsing around here. These new hoof boots from Alexander McQueen priced at almost
when they put it together with the dress, it wasn't so bad. Are you not the only ones? Like when I was little, I used to hear like the clippity clop of heels coming down the hallway. Teachers, you know what I'm talking about. And right, there's like, you hear that it's authoritative. You're like, oh, I want to be that teacher coming down the hallway with my... And so, but also when I was younger, not only because I have horses, why I'm biased.
I think those
boots actually make the sound of a horseshoe, because if not, then I'm not buying them. But if they do, I would consider it.
You would?
I would, because I'm a horse girl. Yeah. Do you guys remember, this is a way back playback, hold on tight, youngins. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And there is a famous scene with the coconuts. Okay, Jess Allen, I hear it's one of your favorites. And so one of the knights of the round table, and he's riding on his horse, and then someone behind him going like
this. His servant named Patsy has two coconuts and goes... And makes the noises.
So anyway, these boots mean I wouldn't need a Patsy. I would just go down the hallway by myself.
Good.
Although I'd love to be your Patsy.
I mean, that's a high price tag though at $4,000 to just like
It's also just, I mean, I don't know. Again, my brain maybe goes to a strange place, but to me, this is just fetish wear. To say,
Really?
There's a fetish called pony play, and it's big in England. It has nothing to do with bestiality. It is where people dress up as a horse and a rider. I did a documentary on it. That's how I know about it. But people, when you get into pony space, it's literally called that, and you literally wear like a bit in your mouth, and you wear hooves. You wear the whole thing. And they get horny from this experience. So to me, this is just
expensive pony play.
It's rich. It's rich. Yeah. That's all it is. Okay. So I feel like I just learned something a little bit about you, though. That's all.
You know how I feel about you.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that one coming. How would you feel if you found out that your date was lying about his job because he wanted to weed out the gold diggers? There's a viral post on Reddit from a woman who discovered that her date made up a story about being a low-paying, I guess having a low-paying job in the trades to see if she was just in it for the money. Okay, Capri, is this offensive or was he just trying to like speed track, you know, his dating scene?
Dude, I think it's a waste of time. And here's why. Because, you know, just let it rip. Let you be you. You just have to present yourself. And I kind of have learned this the hard way. And I think this comes from a place of, you know, distorted gender roles and whatnot. But in my late 20s and early 30s, when I was first in office, I was dating as a sitting senator. And I found myself trying to downplay stuff with guys.
Yeah.
And like trying to like not be who I was. And eventually.
Too powerful. They're too powerful for them.
But like, but there's this internalized, you know, you don't want to be intimidating kind of thing. And slowly but surely, I realized I was wasting my time because eventually they're going to know who you are. They're going to know who you are if you want somebody to be close.
You have to tell the truth.
Give them the full picture. So forget this test. If you have a gazillion dollars, just be like, yo, I got a gazillion dollars. It'll come out in the wash anyway. And vice versa. So,
This kind of reminds me, I kind of feel a little bit bad for him. Maybe he's been burned before. And it kind of reminds me of like every single fairy tale, you know, where it's either the prince or the princess is ugly. And then they make sure that the prince or princess falls in love with them for who they are. And then they kiss and hubba dubba ding gong bell, like they turn into this beautiful person. It's, you just exchange the looks for wealth. And they're just testing them out to see, like, do you like me for me rather than my wealth?
I think, but you have to assume that every woman is looking for that TikTok song, Man in Finance. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
How does it go? It says finance, trust fund, 6'5", blue eyes. I actively avoid finance guys when I was dating.
Yeah.
So this guy is assuming that all women want that.
Yeah.
If you told me that you were a tradesman, as he did, and then you lied about it, then
I'd actually be ticked off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what turns me on? I'll tell you what turns me on.
Ponies.
Ponies. Ponies turn me on. They don't. Cut that. Edit that. Oh, we're live? Okay, moving on. What turns me on is a guy who can work with his hands. My husband is a contractor.
Yeah.
He's a tradesman. I don't know about you, finance guy. Tradespeople are making coin.
Yep.
So that's number one. He's handy around the house. He looks good while doing it.
Uh-huh.
So if you actually lied and said, I'm a tradesman, and then you said you were in finance, I would dump your tush.
That's why we love you. That is why we love you.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear it because I also am not a gold digger, so the idea is like at all. So
if I was fine, I'm the gold digger.
If I was out on a date for real, if I was sort of asking questions and he was cagey about what he was doing, and then I found out afterwards, oh, I was testing you because I thought you might be after me for my money. I mean, that's a huge turnoff. And yet, I mean, I'm just trying to be objective. Like, there are lots. Like, I'm sure there's a nice guy out there who's swimming in gold, and
his name is Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, Scrooge McDuck, and he actually is worried about somebody. He's just trying to weed out. So, what is the alternative? What could he do to weed out? Use a good, like, just gut feeling. I don't know. What's the answer?
Well, he or she wouldn't display their wealth in an ostentatious way and hope they... I feel like I'm just thinking of like six movies where this is the exact subject.
Yeah, it is the plot line.
J-Lo was probably
in
it.
Yes, she was probably in four of them.
Yes.
Three of them straight to video.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, we gave him no help, so sorry about that, sir. Capri, we love having you here. Thank you for coming back.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.